Is this thing on?
Should be.
Yep. Okay, okay. Yep. Right. This is Real Keith here, introducing the beginning of Staggering Stories. And I'm afraid I have an apology to make. We had, the trailer was going to be a magnificent soundscape of superior sounds, painting a wonderful enlarged picture, presenting a riff on the subjects of the story that would have been sublime and delicious and awfully, awfully funny. Unfortunately, real life has got in the way, and we're actually recording this on, Wednesday?
Yeah, 49 hours late.
Things have happened, and this is it, I'm afraid.
It was a bloodbath.
Sorry. Terribly sorry.
Sorry we let you down.
Yeah, sorry.
Shall we just
press on?
No, I'm just sorry. Okay. I'm so sorry.
Sorry.
Welcome to podcast 441. And there are indeed three of us.
As I said, real life has sort of got in the way. People have been ill. People are on holiday. People have to go to council meetings.
Yeah, and indeed be buried. But
So, but don't worry, we have the Stalt Sausage Fest here.
Yeah. Here at Big... Not Big Finish.
Okay.
On that note...
without further ado...
Here at the Staggering Story.
Let us rapidly get on with the news with El Presidente!
Woo! Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah. Ooh.
The BBC looking for more intelligent marketing.
Ooh.
The BBC has seemingly long struggled to market Doctor Who and has now decided to add some intelligence to their efforts. Artificial intelligence, that is.
Oh, dear.
How 9000, or Google Gemini, summarised the now-removed BBC press release as... This is an article about the BBC using AI-generated marketing for Doctor Who. The BBC is experimenting with this technology to streamline promotional content. They will test different marketing copy variations created by AI. This will allow them to learn more about the creative potential of AI. The BBC is committed to transparency and will label all AI-generated content. Will this reduce the size of the BBC's marketing department?
Probably.
Probably not for now, as somebody needs to feed the AI the facts and then rework whatever comes out the other end. Nevertheless, at some point, the marketing division of the BBC might yet be the first against the wall when the AI revolution comes.
I am not at all sure about
the fact they've removed the article from the official BBC press release site is a bit telling, I think. An idea before its time, maybe?
Definitely. I mean, certainly with AI at the moment, it has all the reasoning, the facts, but does it necessarily have the nuance?
Well, given the AI summarisation there, probably not.
Yeah.
It's fine as a starting off point to give you some ideas, but you still need proper marketing drones there to massage it into interesting ideas and entice people.
As fake Keith does, you need an editor. Some things need to be cut down. I mean, the wonderful thing is, at the moment, they're using AI to put certain adverts in newspapers. Okay?
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
They just...
To write the news... The article?
No. Just to pair the article up with adverts.
Oh, okay, right.
So just put adverts on the page.
Yeah.
And so you get things that appeared recently, such as a woman found locked in wardrobe, husband keeps her for 3 months after she's died in the wardrobe.
Mm-hmm.
Paired with wardrobe adverts.
Yeah, it's not really AI, just keyword search, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's not intelligence.
It's not...
Real form.
It's not... No thought there, no nuance.
No.
Guffs like that can happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I can see its use for doing maybe some images, that sort of thing. But if you're trying to promote a real thing and not just some knockoff Willy Wonka type event.
What are you implying?
Then you want it to have some resemblance to what they're actually going to show.
Yeah, that's the trouble. I mean, it could be my almost 60-year-old brain going, newfangled tech, but you need, some things need to be not released out into the wild, but, you know, drawn back and yeah, have some thought put into it.
Well, it'd be interesting to see what happens. Maybe it's too early now, but I can see it happening eventually. But it still needs oversight.
Yeah,
you're not going to scare push button, give me some AI-generated nonsense and then just leave it to do its thing.
Yeah, there you are. I've done my job. It's done. Put it out there. It doesn't work.
No.
The Boys.
Oh, yeah.
Fourth season dated. Mm. Amazon's wonderfully cynical superhero series, The Boys, will return for a fourth season starting on Thursday, the 13th of June.
Mm.
3 episodes of 8 will drop on the first day, and then 1 every Thursday for the next 5 weeks.
Mm.
We know that the spin-off, Gen V, is already working on a second season, and rumours suggest that a fifth season of The Boys will start filming next month. If you enjoy the rivalry between Carl Urban's Bully Butcher and Anthony Starr's Homelander, then it will appear that there's a lot more left to look forward to.
Mm. That's good news.
I've watched the first and halfway through the second. I've yet to get back to it.
Okay.
It's something that I keep intending to do. Mm. But again, much like this podcast, real life gets in the way.
Yeah, I did read the comics years ago, a good few years ago, and it has diverged quite significantly from the comics, but it's still great in its own separate little universe. But
yeah.
I've been watching it. I've not seen Genevieve yet, but I'm up to date with The Boys.
Genevieve's quite good too. It's all set at university for up-and-coming superheroes.
Right, okay.
Different take.
Do you have, a little bit of crossover at all? Or?
You do get some characters who cross over.
Okay.
Yeah, same universe, same time period.
Okay.
Doctor Who news!
Ooh!
Benny Summerfield returns.
Yeah.
After a recent appearance alongside Christopher Eccleston's Ninth Doctor, more on that later, it is time for Benny Summerfield to once again return to her own box sets. And those audiomongers at Big Finish are certainly obliging. In recent years, Benny has shared her adventures with Lisa Bowman's real-life partner, David Warner, as the Unbound Doctor. After his death last year, it was unclear what might happen with Benny's own range of audios, but now she is back for the Eternity Club. According to the Big Finish press release, we should be welcome to the Eternity Club, where a warm welcome awaits the universe's greatest explorers, a place of mystery, intrigue, and creeping danger. Professor Bernie Summerfield has finally been invited to join. But membership comes at a terrible price. 99p. As with the recent splitting of Star Cops and box sets into monthly releases, so too with this virtual box set of 4 discs over 4 months, each featuring 2 roughly half-hour-long stories. Each CD will cost £10.99, or £8.99 for download-only version. Releases will be this September, October, November and December.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, that cost doesn't seem unreasonable.
About that, because what would a traditional 4-disc box set cost? $29.99, maybe $35?
Yeah, I think it would be more in the 30 range than the 20 range myself. That's the way they've been creeping recently.
Yeah, I think maybe 35. So if we're looking at, what, £44 for the 4 individual, it's a bit of a creep in price.
And it may be, but the other thing is, if you don't like it, you're lumped with the 4 discs.
True.
You know, this one, if you didn't like the first one, I don't know whether their stories were linked. 9 times out of 10, the Benny ones sort of were vaguely linked.
Yeah, I think these will be vaguely. But as there are 8 stories in 4 discs.
Yeah.
So they're going to be quite short stories.
Well, yeah, half hour.
They need to make up their mind because they were shifting all their things onto monthly. And now they seem to be shifting them
to
all
box
back.
Sets now back to monthly. Yeah. I feel like they're slightly struggling. I don't know if that's true, if that's my perception. But with them changing up how they're doing things.
Yeah, could
I
be.
I feel like they might be regretting getting rid of the main range, main range.
The range started in 99, so they've been going for quite some time. No disrespect to either of the fine, fine actors there, but none of them are getting any younger.
No, but it didn't have to be just the classic Doctors. They could have expanded the
monthly
range.
Well, they have. They've diversified and mixed a few things up, but they have lost a couple of the Blake 7 people, couple of Doctor Who people.
Mm-hmm.
The Star Cops group aren't sort of spring chickens anymore.
No, they're still doing it.
I'm not knocking...
The original cast are all there, apart from one who was died back.
Not knocking any of them, I'm just...
Yeah. Any addendums?
Oh, do we have addendums?
We have addendums addendums. Do we have addendums for the addendums?
My first addendum, addendum the first, it's available on, I think it's on Sounds.
Oh, BBC Sounds.
BBC Sounds.
Right, yeah, yeah.
so I'm not sure if that's available worldwide. But we have Alex Kingston.
Dead.
No, not quite.
Not quite.
Reading Frankenstein.
Oh, okay.
Frankenstein. Yep.
Frankenstein. She's doing a dramatic interpretation of Frankenstein.
Okay. I wonder if that's showing you on Radio 4 at the moment, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's moving on to sounds, but it's currently on Radio 4.
The current book of the week or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I must have done several versions of that by now, but yeah, it'd be interesting to hear her version.
Something interesting.
Right.
Fond and interesting to my heart. Role-playing.
Right.
There is a new role-playing game out done by an unusual quarter. NASA have released a role-playing game.
Okay.
Huh? NASA, the National Aeronautics Space Association.
Yeah, I know what it stands for, but I'm just... huh?
Odd thing for them to do, but okay, is it to occupy their astronauts while they're on a long trip to Mars?
A dark mystery has settled over the city of Alastron on the rogue planet of Elixirs. The rogue planet of Elixirs.
Sure, it wasn't AI generated.
Researchers dedicated to study the cosmos has disappeared, and the Hubble telescope has vanished from the Earth's timeline. Only an ambitious crew of adventurers can uncover what was lost. Are you up to the challenge?
Okay.
Sure, let's do it.
Is it a pen and paper RPG?
The adventure is designed for a party of 4-7 level, 7-10 characters, and is easily adaptable for your preferred tabletop role-playing game. NASA's first TTRPG adventure invites you to take on a classic villain while also using and learning science skills as you overcome challenges and embark on an exciting quest to unlock more knowledge about our universe. Download your game's documents before you get ready to explore Exalas.
Okay, weird. I can quite imagine a lot of, particularly back in the 80s and 90s, but even now, a lot of the people who work at NASA probably RPG enjoying themselves.
Yeah.
Odd for them to make an official release of this.
It is called The Lost Universe.
Okay.
And that
sounds
cool.
It is an official NASA RPG game.
Those American tax dollars at work.
Yeah. Talking of role-playing games,
yep,
we shall neatly sidestep into, I'm going to mangle this, but Modiphius role-playing.
Oh, Modiphius, is it?
Thank you, Modiphius.
Star Trek guys.
I kept on calling it Morpheus, but no, it's they did the Star Trek game, yep. They have done a Dune game, they do Actung Cthulhu, which is World War II Cthulhu role-playing, but they have just got hold of, the license for Discworld.
Oh, okay.
So in association with Terry Pratchett's estate, they are putting together, to be released, a new Discworld role-playing game.
Wow, has there ever been one before? It should have been.
Yeah, there has been. Back in the 90s, there was a GURPS version, which is generic role-playing game, which was put together with the assistance of Sir Terry Pratchett, who was just Terry Pratchett at the time.
Yeah.
And they re-released that as a PDF in the 2000s, early 2000s. But the Star Trek people have got hold of, Modiphius has got hold of the license.
Interesting. Oh, there's a lot of source books you can do there. How many novels are there? And
quite easily. I think they're just starting around off with the Ankh-Morpork. So it'll probably be guards, or maybe the wizards. But they will expand out. If it's anything like the Star Trek game, they will expand out quite rapidly.
Yeah. 41 books, I think it looks like.
Talking of Modiphius,
yikes,
they are now re-releasing a second edition of the Star Trek Adventures role-playing game.
Of course.
That was released in 2017 and has actually been very successful for them.
Oh, good.
Okay. They've got a whole plethora of source books, scenarios, actually even little figures. They've actually quite interestingly released the STL for the little figures, so you can print them yourself.
Oh wow.
If you've got a 3D printer.
Yeah.
I think it needs a resin 3D printer
preferably, because it's better high resolution.
Yeah, for a better resolution. But yeah, you can print the actual miniatures out as many as you like.
Wow. You can have armies of Spocks or...
Well, no, you can go for armies of Borg or armies of Klingons or Romulans or various...
You can make 7-9ers life-size if you want to.
That could be worrying. And my final segue
yep.
from that into Captain Picard's Captain's Chair.
Okay. Mm-hmm. With his bum print still in there.
The chair from the second season until the final season was the same. They changed it after the first season.
Oh, did they? Okay.
So, first season, it's a different chair. And then they struck the set ready for the first film.
Yep.
Before the end of All Good Things.
Yep. And Generations.
And the first episode, the first film, Generations, the chair went missing.
Right.
And has been lost for 30 years. Captain Picard's chair had vanished.
Oh, somebody with authorization for the area got in there.
Got in there and
stuck it in the back of their pickup.
The reason I bring this up is because the chair itself has suddenly popped up in a prop store auction.
Oh, okay.
So for sale. And it has been authenticated as the genuine article. Mm. It is Captain Picard's chair. However, it has suddenly disappeared from the auction list.
Right.
Because Prop Store has done a deal with, I think it's the Trek World Museum, and it is now being sent to them and will be preserved in a proper museum for everyone to see. As Indiana Jones says, that belongs in a museum!
Yeah, and it belongs to Paramount, presumably somebody nicked it.
Yeah.
Well, as I said, it has now been donated and will be preserved, properly looked after. And whenever you get a Star Trek exhibit moving to various countries or various towns, it will feature.
Ah, so you can expect a green screen behind that at every Comic Con you ever go to ever again.
Yeah.
That's cool. I have an addendum.
All right.
I have a Doctor Who addendum.
What is your Doctor Who addendum?
It's very exciting.
Is that Tom Baker?
No.
No, okay.
Have another guess. Is it the other Baker? No. The Ninth Doctor.
Ooh. Dead.
Meets River Song.
Okay, yeah.
Woo! You're happy, I can tell.
Christopher Eccleston is joined by Alex Kingston in Starcrossed, a brand new box set full of full cast audio dramas from Big Finish Productions, due for release in May 2024.
Soon?
Yeah, for the final release in the current series of The Ninth Doctor Adventures, Time Lords with a war-torn past meets a very important woman from his future.
Mm.
It's finally time for her to say hello, sweetie, to her husband's ninth incarnation as the two of them embark on three adventures together. They visit a planet in thrall to a dating app, an intergalactic bank with a catastrophic glitch, and a raging maelstrom. Fantastic. The three thrilling stories are Swipe Right by John Dorney, Face of the Apocalypse by Lizzie Hopley, and Archipelago by Tim Foley.
Okay, so she's in all three of them.
Yeah.
That's unusual for...
The current box set that we're talking about shortly, Benny Summerfield in it is the big draw.
Yeah.
But she's only one of the three.
Yeah.
Kingston's in all three is really good. We still get back to that age-old problem of the Doctor's got to forget her sometime before the library. It doesn't necessarily have to be this incarnation. It can be Tennant who forgets her.
But yeah, they've got to readdress. Yeah.
Certainly, I'm excited just to see how...
They bounce off each other.
Yeah, how they bounce off each other, how the dynamic between River and Nine goes, and how... Because obviously he's a bit more bravado and toughed up and stuff, and very...
Standoffish.
Standoffish. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So how is she going to really get to interact with him in the way she does?
Once it's she's rubber, he's glue.
I don't think it's really held true, but if she is going backwards in his timeline, which she's not really, bounces around, but she'll know about the Time War.
Yeah.
She'll have a lot of knowledge. So unlike Benny, if we get to later, she didn't know what happened. No. You'd expect River Song to have a pretty good idea.
It could be. I mean, I know you said just not backwards, but bouncing around. But it could be somewhere just before the Christmas episode, because she had a long list of photos. You know the one? River Song. She acknowledged all the different faces in that one.
She did.
Be interesting to see how they managed to untangle the knotty thread.
Yeah, indeed.
Looking forward to River Song again. I say that as if I love River Song. I do love River Song. She's a great character. I've still not listened to all of her series.
No, nor me. I do have them all. Box sets.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, there was addendum, wasn't there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, due to the very good success of Disney releasing some 4K Blu-ray steelbooks last year for two Star Wars projects and two Marvel projects, those being Star Wars, it was basically Mando Season 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
For Marvel, it was WandaVision Series 1 or the series, and Loki Season 1.
Yep.
And because they did so well, Disney are releasing four more this year, those being Andor for Star Wars and Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And then for Marvel, Moon Knight and The Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're steelbook sets with 4K and Blu-ray. 1080p Blu-ray.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Look forward to those. I'll definitely buy the two Star Wars ones.
I've already pre-ordered all four.
I've seen Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and I've seen Kenobi. Okay. Don't think I've seen the others.
You've not seen Andor?
I've not seen Andor.
Oh, Andor is excellent.
Oh, Andor's brilliant.
It's a slow burn at the beginning. The first three, you really need to watch them as back-to-back, and at that point, it really kicks off.
I shall have to put that down on my viewing.
Mm. You definitely should.
You will see the new companion in Andor as well.
Yeah.
Varada Sethu, is it?
Yeah, Varada Sethu, something like that.
Well, at this precise moment, the future companion.
Yes.
Yeah.
Depending on your point of view, if you're there in Cardiff, film me as the current companion.
Referring to what we've seen on TV or not yet. Yeah. No, for quite a while away.
It's very confusing.
Okay, I shall have to track that down then.
Obi-Wan Kenobi's excellent too.
I've seen Kenobi.
Hello there.
Oh, yeah.
And finally then, Michael John Edward Culver.
Dead.
Yeah, actor, a British actor, who you may know from the likes of Empire Strikes Back. He was Captain Nieder.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Apologies. Accepted. Captain Nieder.
Yeah.
He's also apparently in a James Bond. I don't think he's ever done any Doctor Who, but he's been in everything you can think of otherwise.
One of those jobbing actors. One of those, oh, it's what's-his-face.
Yep. He was in the original Avengers. He was in New Avengers too.
Oh.
Very few people have been in both of those series.
Yeah.
Patrick McNee. Sorry,
obviously, but...
He's in Doomwatch, The Persuaders. He was in Whodunit. Space 1999.
So really, he wasn't in much.
Yeah.
No, Van der Volk, the Sweeney, Crown Court, of course, who wasn't.
Yeah.
Original Dick Turpin from 1980, Shoestring, you name it. He's been in Casualty.
For the ongoing
Boone
gag that started ages ago, was he in Crossroads?
Was he in Crossroads? Probably not. I think he has some dignity. So let's have a quick look.
Dooby 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 doo.
He was in Cross Plot. But not Crossroads.
Oh, so close.
Halfway there. Okay.
But yeah, it was in a heck of a lot of stuff. Spooks, New Tricks.
But not anymore.
But not anymore. I know he's died aged 85, which is not bad innings.
Not bad. And that endeth the news.
So, we have been listening to some audio-monger output.
That we have. Woo! The latest audio-monger output.
Audio-monger.
I'm working these false teeth in for a horse.
It's featuring that Eccleston of a Doctor, the Ninth Doctor, in Buried Threats.
Ooh. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Pause for music. It is the latest release, if I'm not mistaken.
It is, yeah.
Yes.
I don't think it's that old. We're fairly up to date for once. I'm sure we've skipped many of his boxes.
Just throw them out. We'll
but
get
this,
back
the
them.
Big draw this one is that we've got Bernice Summerfield.
Yes.
Professor Benny herself.
Yes.
As mentioned, she's only in one of the three. But they leave that one to the last, clearly.
Yeah. My case was first.
They have to get to the end. Right. The first one.
The third one.
Oh, okay. In your case, the third one. The best way to sum it up is it's the historical, I think. Because the box sets we have is, first is historical, second is present day, third is future.
Yeah. A Theatre of Cruelty.
Yep.
By Lisa McMullin is the first one. A Threat from the Dawn of Time.
Aren't they all?
Yeah, indeed.
This one's... the
dreams.
Yeah, the threat reminded me more of Wide Blue Yonder.
Yeah.
The villain. For want of a better term, the villain from Wide Blue Yonder. In the background, it's possessive, but it's basically, it's hungry. It's trying to draw itself together to experience life, I think the best way to describe it.
It's trying to break through. It's a bit Sapphire and Steel like.
Yes.
In that regard.
Yeah. I had to listen to this twice.
Right.
Because it took me a little while to actually wrap my head around what was going on.
And it didn't help that this is effectively a celebrity historical, but with a celebrity which I've never heard of.
No.
I get the feeling that most people outside of the acting or writing profession probably haven't heard of either.
Yeah.
Antonin Artaud?
Not Antony.
Nope.
You sure it wasn't Antony?
It's a French playwright.
Yeah, I got to admit, I didn't recognise the name or recognise the historical figure.
Yeah.
But apparently he was the one who kicked off and started immersive theatre.
Yeah, that's what they were implying.
Yeah.
Which isn't a big thing.
No.
I've done a bit of it. There's some things in London, like you can go along to the War of the Worlds interactive thing, where you're there with a group of actors.
The Who one we did.
Yeah,
was
Time Fracture was like that.
Yeah.
And there's a bit of that in the currently running Matt Smith play. in Enemy of the People, which I went to see a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
When, beginning of the second act, second half, the characters are in a town hall.
Yeah.
And we're the audience in that town hall, and we get to actually give our opinion to the actors, to the characters.
Okay.
And they have to wing it with their replies. It's quite interesting.
Okay.
So this guy seemed to be quite damaged.
There are shades of the Van Gogh one.
Right, yes. Obviously, he's got mental problems.
Not as many problems or as bad as Van Gogh had.
No.
But there was shades of that in this. I'm trying to remember the name of the episode.
Vincent.
Vincent, thank
doctor.
You. Vincent.
Vincent and the Doctor.
Vincent and the Doctor. There was no invisible chicken, but there was shades of...
Well, not that they made any reference to, but you never know. They could always be
there. There could have been an invisible chicken there.
I'll have you know that invisible chicken was called a Corypheus. Not like that's one of my favourite episodes.
No disrespect. No disrespect.
Yeah, I just watched a couple of reactions to that recently. Actually, the last few weeks, somebody had caught up to that point. But anyway.
There are shades with this because he undergoes electrical shock therapy that makes him susceptible to this entity.
Yeah.
Which I know is given a name, but I can't for the life of me remember at this present moment in time.
Nope, I've not noted it down, so I can't tell it.
I will research.
And you've also got this entity trying to create itself in the real world by affecting his dreams and enabling Antonin, who... Number 9 keeps calling Anthony, much to his annoyance, enables him to bring things through from the dream state into the real world.
Yeah.
Only for a short period of time, but they're wanting to make it permanent.
Yes.
It took me 2 listens to get my head around this.
Yeah, me too.
I don't think it's doing it a disservice. I may not have been in the right headspace for it at the time.
In which case, I wasn't either. I think there are some which really grab you and they keep your attention.
Yeah.
There's other ones where you have to almost work at it. And this is more that, unfortunately.
The name of the enemy is Astrophe.
Astrophe, thank you. The entity is called Astrophe. That apparently have been around since the dawn of time. The dawn of time! But is now got enough energy to try to attempt to make itself manifest.
I quite like the very beginning where you get the Doctor's view.
Oh, yes.
And then you have different languages being used. So you get French and Italian. And then you get that same scene replayed.
Yeah.
From the other point of view. That bit threw me off a little bit. I was like, wait, what's happening?
I got to admit, it did throw me off to begin with. That's, again, it clicked into place the second time round.
Right.
Okay. Sort of walking to work, listening to it. I went, oh, yeah. Clunk. Like, that's what I mean. My brain might not have been in a receptive. Some of them just come in as a stream of consciousness, as you say, and the others you've got to work at.
Yeah.
And then you get the scene replayed from Anthony's point of view, and you understand everything.
Yeah.
And also, there was, I thought, a nice touch as one of the actors who plays the father. Very verbose, overdrawn and dramatic. And then he talks quite normally afterwards. But, you know, so where's Anthony gone? He is in the... I mean, he's just down there.
Yeah. Some good actor-type stuff going on. Yeah. Actors playing actors.
Yeah. It's a few nice touches, but like I said, it took me a little bit of a run to get up to it.
Which is appropriate, given the next one is called The Running Man.
The Running Man.
Running Men, sorry.
Sorry, and this one is present-day Halifax.
Apparently, very close to present-day.
Yeah, as near as damn it. Can you remember who the villain was? The
Vortex Amoeba.
Yeah, it was. This one is down to the Doctor. This is the Doctor's fault, apparently.
Yeah, he crashed into a shoal, or whatever the term is, of amoeba the Vortex. One Klingon.
I like the way they've realised, because all you can hear is a load of bubbles going blip, 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 blip. The human, the minister.
Had Sergeant Amiga, Desai, Fiona Wade, Annalise Avonlea, Pookie Quesnoy.
The actress's name, Pookie. I love that. Yeah.
She was in Christmas Carol, wasn't she? She was captain of the starship in Christmas Carol.
I think so.
Yeah. I recognise her. I've seen a picture of her. Yeah.
Amongst many other things.
So I'm not to make fun, not to point things, but I just love that name, Pookie. Anyway. She's a rather a vicious council member, I think was a better word. Her great-grandfather helped build the town, so... part of the Victorian satanic mills.
Right, yeah, obviously Halifax, West Yorkshire. That was a big industrial area back in the day, but nowadays not so much.
Not so much,
The industry is gone, and a lot of that area is struggling in real life.
And though she's attempting to... build a, I don't want to say supermarket, because it seemed to something more important to that, but it was a construction that would allegedly revitalise the area.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing so, she's quite willing to steamroll over various treasured, priceless artefacts to get the job done.
Yep.
And one of those artefacts is the Halifax Giblet. Basically, it sounds like a cut-down version of a guillotine.
Yes, something like that, yes. Convicted people were executed, I believe.
Yeah. To a certain extent, this smacks of sapphire and steel, as in history has turned around the giblet. There's been lots of life lost to it, energy lost to it.
Yeah, yeah.
And as the Doctor mentions, you can't destroy energy. Energy just changes its form.
Yes.
And it has changed to be a psychic power centre, for want of a better term.
Which this amoeba thing is feeding off of. And
yeah, and an attempt to stay alive and to get back to its own environment. And unfortunately, in doing that, it's going to drag everything with it.
General mayhem. In this one, we've got Sergeant Ambika Desai.
Yes.
Who was very much Yaz with the serial number. Yeah. Yeah.
That did ring to me as well. Sort of, it's Yaz by another name.
Yeah, even to the point where she was apparently the only police officer in the entire area on her own, with no backup.
Yeah. It works for me better here, because I know Yaz was a junior officer. And
she's obviously a fairly recently made sergeant.
She's a recently made sergeant, so she has to go for the initial hazing to which people back at the station seem to be putting her through the hazing, going out to obscure calls and shout outs for her first week.
Generally, I don't know if it's true in West Yorkshire Police, but generally you get transferred when you get promoted.
Yeah.
It's maybe a new area for her, although she seemed familiar.
Yeah, familiar, certainly familiar with the area. And having said that, I think it might be a little bit difficult for some of American listeners.
Oh.
There is a little bit of local language in there. Not swear words, but there's a wonderful scene where you've got the Doctor trying to explain that a tea cake doesn't actually have currency.
Oh, yeah.
A current tea cake is something different from a tea cake.
Yeah.
And DeSanza sort of turns around and says, will you two stop chuntering?
Yeah, she says chuntering twice.
There's a bit about the tea cake in this little guide. The Doctor and Frank argue about current tea cakes. The Doctor strongly believes a tea cake is meant to be a toasted bread cake.
Yeah.
But Frank says that's a bab.
The American crowd, or certainly the non-Yorkshire crowd, might wonder what the hell chuntering is. But
yeah, I've heard the term before, but only about babies and just making odd noises.
Yeah. This was the first time I'd heard it.
I just like sort of a dash of local colour. So whoever wrote this was, I think...
Oh, they are from Halifax.
Because the Sky Roads are mentioned.
Sky Street, what it's called?
Sky Street. Yeah,
which is a real thing.
Above the market,
Yeah, I did quickly look it up, and you can indeed get tours, although they're not running at the moment because they're doing some work on the building beneath. But yeah, it's weird. It looks like a normal street, except it just happens to be on the top of a big building.
Yeah. That reminds me a hell of a lot of Edinburgh. Edinburgh is built on roads. So you'll be walking at shop level, so obviously you're on the ground floor, walk past and you suddenly get a gap between buildings, and actually there's another road beneath you.
Oh, okay.
You see, you can see so you're not on the first floor, you're something like on the second or the third floor.
But you felt you were on twice.
Yeah, okay. You've walked past shop fronts.
Yeah.
And also one of the co-stars in this one, the local historian.
Yes.
Was played by Simon Rouse, who people might know from The Bill. He was superintendent, or DCI initially, Jack Meadows.
Oh, good grief.
He was a major character in The Bill.
I recognise the name Jack Meadows, yeah.
Yeah, so interestingly, they've got him, and he's not playing a police officer.
Yeah, he's not playing a cop,
There were a couple of things with the police thing, and Beaker demanded people's names all the time, and the moment they didn't give them names, she arrested them. Which is not an arrestable offence. You don't have to give your name.
Just cause, I'm sorry. Just cause.
Yeah.
You think she'd know that with her training?
Well, indeed. But the writer didn't seem to.
Yeah, it didn't get picked up on.
Yeah. But yeah, so there's a little few things there which seems a bit odd, but you forgive it. It just does wind up a bit.
I've got to admit, I didn't pick up on that, but it didn't spoil my enjoyment. One thing I did love is the fact that the TARDIS got covered in police tape.
wouldn't last very long in the vortex. But
no, no. I enjoyed this one overall.
Yeah, I thought this was better than the first one for me.
It picked me up and carried me along quite nicely.
And also I liked at the end the mention of UNIT.
Yes.
UNIT swept in to cover things up. The unseen chief inspector, whoever it was that they were talking to smooth over things.
yeah.
It does make you think how often they're doing this. It's cleaning up after the doctor all the time. Whenever he turns up in modern day, even if he isn't involved in UNIT, they get a call, we're coming to explain it to you. Don't arrest him. We've had chaos.
There's been fires and burning buildings. And there is this blue box.
It's him again.
Blue box incident.
Yeah.
So for those that don't know as well, Running Man, in popular folklore, people who managed to escape execution in Halifax by running beyond the boundary were called Running Men.
Yeah.
The Running Man pub is named after them.
Because the victims of the Giblet are manifested as ghostly figures, the Running Men. Mm-hmm. Like Lockwood and Co., their touch would convert you into them.
Dr. Mason referenced a Vestigia, doesn't he?
Yes. Yeah, I thought of...
Rivers of London.
Rivers of London,
The Giblet was outlawed by Oliver Cromwell around 1650.
That is mentioned. I think the line is, you know you're bad if Oliver Cromwell doesn't like it.
Yeah.
If I have a complaint, it would be about the ending. It's just the Doctor did a thing.
Yeah.
As is so often the case.
Yeah.
He did something tech.
Yeah, technobabble wave screwdriver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was fun getting there.
It was a good story up until that point. It didn't ruin it for me.
No.
But for the next one... you get Bernie Summerfield.
Yes, yeah. Professor Arthur Fandango.
I love that name. It's the reason why we're here, the Benny one.
It is. Finally, we get Bernie Summerfield with a Ninth Doctor on an archaeological dig, of course.
Ancient history.
And actually, I'm quite interested in the fact that they've allowed her to age. She comes across as 60 here, an older, slightly more curmudgeonly, if anything's possible, but Benny.
It makes sense. I don't know how her ageing relates to the Doctor's ageing.
Yeah.
Because often in TV Doctor Who, you will see characters in sequence.
Yeah.
So the Master generally always turns up in sequence.
In sequence,
you don't go meeting an old Master, at least not on TV.
I've just escaped from Crash of Alvar, Zerifas.
Yeah. If you come across an old companion, it's later in their life, et cetera, which makes sense for TV.
Yeah.
So it's simpler for people to understand.
Yes.
But for Big Finish, it ain't necessarily true. No. They jump around a bit
as
more.
So with the Big Finishes, certainly with the Benny stories, you're not given a specific age for her.
Yeah.
It's always played young, for want of a better term, between 40s and 30s, somewhere around that point.
Yeah.
But this one, she seemed to definitely come across... as more towards the end of her career.
She was complaining about all the modern tech they were using.
Yeah.
They're literally just scanning the ground with, what was it, sonic seismology.
Teleporting out the artifacts.
Yeah, so they're not digging trenches, stuff like that.
Getting the context.
They can create a virtual view of what it would look like if they had done the excavation and then just beam stuff out. Which makes sense.
It comes back to slightly what we were saying earlier in the news about the AI. There is no context to what they're discovering. Because I think that comes up as a major plot point in one, certainly with Twix, Benny's friend.
Oh, wait, yeah.
Twist, Twix, something like that. Anyway.
The one with two hearts.
The woman with two hearts. Yes.
Finger Twisk.
You have an archaeological dig on a planet that seems to be surrounded very much of its life in a coronal storm or a time storm. So it's only very occasionally can you get to the planet. And live. And so it's a great archaeological mystery of where the inhabitants of the planet had gone.
Mm.
It was a massive potential spacefaring race that was hideously savage and about to launch an unending war on the galaxy.
Yeah.
And then they just disappeared overnight.
Yeah, one night they just vanished.
Like an old oak table.
Yes. So initially you think, oh, well, they've been wiped out by the Time War.
Yes. Yeah.
Not quite.
That's what I thought. I thought they were allies or cohorts that sort of got
trampled underfoot.
Yeah. No. The actual reason is Time War related, but much more devious than that.
A weapon used in the Time War falls to their planet.
Yeah, it's something they did, which they have done in this, which I would like to have done them them to have done more in the actual series, mm-hmm. in the is leftover Time War equipment, minefields for a better yeah. term. You go for any war and the minefields take lives decades after yeah, the war's
cost
gone.
Munitions or whatever's left over, yeah.
yeah.
And the sea mines and
yeah, you, all manner of... You got nothing like that from the Time War, which was slightly disappointed, which was I thought was a scope for story.
It was, it really was.
Telling. But anyway, I think they should have moved on from the Time War, but I do miss it.
The good old days.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so the Doctor is there as Professor Arthur Fandango.
Yeah.
He panicked, apparently.
Yeah, when writing a form.
Yeah.
It's the best thing you come up with.
And he's there trying to track down this device and deactivate it.
So, and then, of course, the moment that they discover the police box, Benny immediately thinks, oh, yeah, here's the yeah, Doctor. Yeah. And she immediately clocks that Fandango is actually the Doctor.
Yeah, I do love yeah. the fact that the cuboid artifact, can you tell what colour it is?
Yeah.
Blue! That's a finger! That's a finger! Beat bastardly!
Then they can resolve enough to read the writing. By that point, she already knew.
She's yeah. storming out yeah. to try to find Professor Arthur Fandango.
Yeah.
yeah.
And she's clearly spoken about the Doctor in her journal.
Yeah,
and,
she...
Because they were able to find out about him through yeah. her work.
What's the lead professor? Because we had a lead professor.
Cantu or something?
Cantonar or something.
Not Cantonar, Canterbury. No.
Canterville.
Canterville, that's it.
Yes, sir.
Who has more dollar signs in her eyes than archaeological discoveries.
Oh, yes. Her plan is to get some DNA from these creatures, I think, and...
The rare Corovins.
Yeah, so that's to sell the DNA of the Corovins to Lomax, who's the business partner who's yep. backing the whole thing.
Yeah.
And he's after DNA for his weapons division.
Yeah, exactly.
While she is after an exclusive TV right and a documentary series.
Yeah, or indeed the entire channel to herself once she discovers the possibility of using the TARDIS and whatever. Yeah, see time.
The gizmo is connected to the TARDIS, which feeds energy and then creates a temporal window to which they can see what's going on. So she then's into the TV series. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, they can't not only see, they can cross through the temporal window.
Which is obviously where our alien friends skip over those millennia.
Yep.
Or try to anyway.
There was an inscription no one could read, but by the end of it, they figure out, gone to invade the future, back soon.
Yeah. Yeah, but the real main event is the pairing of Benny and the Ninth Doctor in this one.
For a certain extent, Big Finish have shied away from the Time War with the Ninth Doctor, because that has been mostly done, processed on the TV screen.
Yep.
But I do like the way they, between the Doctor and Benny, the way they don't talk about it.
Yeah, doesn't he mention Time War?
He does, but it's certainly... You can see
cataclysm,
you can see the word Time War in the space that they're skirting around.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Which I do love.
Yeah, and Benny didn't try to push him too hard.
No.
She'd give it time.
Yeah.
So I don't know if we'll ever see these two together again. At the moment, this is the latest we've seen Benny with any Doctor, isn't it?
Yeah.
So she's never met any Tennant Doctors.
As far as she's got is... With eight a couple of times.
Oh, yeah.
That's as far as she's got. I don't think we've had any...
She's never come through to New Who.
No. So we did have one with her and River, but that's as far as we got.
Yes, right, yeah. Yeah, so that's open for her to come through to more... Certainly...
More up-to-date.
Obviously, 10th Doctor's a clear, obvious way to go, isn't it?
Yeah. Be interesting to see those two together.
It would, yeah. But then we're getting into River Song territory, aren't we?
Yeah, that's it.
It's tricky. You've
got to be careful on whose toes you step on.
Yeah.
What we were saying earlier in the news is context. We find out that Twist is pregnant.
Yes.
So she also has a double heartbeat,
yeah.
but for a completely different reason.
Yeah, you feel like this is written after Jodie Whittaker announced that she was pregnant and she was playing the Doctor with two hearts. It feels like they've taken that idea. And
inspiration. Oh, that's an idea.
Yeah.
For about 10-15 minutes, Twix bluffs as a Time Lord.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a nice touch, the way they did that. But again, context. You know, she's got a double heartbeat, she's a Time Lord. No, she's pregnant.
They weren't synchronised, apparently.
Yeah. But yeah, I know, on the whole, I enjoyed this one immensely. I really did.
Yeah.
It's a nice pretty topper, good. And pretty it good. Was nice to... see them together, and it was also, again, quite nice to see or hear an older Benny.
Yeah, see where it goes. Surely this can't be the last time they meet.
Yeah.
Benny doesn't have an end point unlike River Song, does she?
No. We don't know how she ends up at the moment. It's each new disc is a revelation.
Yeah. Got her own virtual box set of four coming out
at
the end of the year. We'll see who appears in those.
Yep.
I'm sorry, I was just reading something. But what? But yeah, at the end of it, he mentions about trying to keep away from archaeologists. Archaeologists for a while, which is quite funny considering we now know what the next book says in this range.
Yeah.
Supposedly.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
So he's now going to see River Song afterwards. Archaeologists.
It looks like they planned it.
Almost, yeah.
Because is that the next one different? May?
Yep.
Yeah, so yeah, that's the next one.
What was the line? I point and laugh at archaeologists.
Yeah.
But yeah, I enjoyed this. Yeah, it was always good going back and listening to, like, Christopher Eccleston's Doctor and hearing him having fun back in the role and enjoying it again.
Yeah.
And I think he really does. I think he genuinely is enjoying, that, like, doing it again.
Yeah. With the big finish, he doesn't have to carry any of the baggage from the TV series.
Yeah, not
whatever happened there, we'll move on from that. But yeah, so overall, first one, good, but it needs to be listened to a couple of times. But overall, the box set is definitely listenable.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
It is very good. Enjoyed it.
I would recommend it. It has the done seal of approval. We have been watching stuff.
We have.
We have, yes.
Quite a long stuff.
Yeah.
A couple of years late, but we get there eventually. Because,
well, the next stuff is coming up soon, so we thought we'd better talk Doom together.
Go back to the old stuff.
Yeah, go.
The new
do,
stuff.
Do the old stuff first, then the new stuff.
Yeah.
What have we been watching?
Dune.
Cue the music.
Another Ryan one. It's not Terry and June?
Not Terry and June.
No, not Terry and June.
Dune.
Oh, okay.
Dune.
This is what I have to put up with.
Well, Dune, part one by Denis Villeneuve. Villeneuve? Nothing like that.
This is the
pandemic era.
Yeah, no, but this, I think it was 2019?
No, it was during the, was it 21?
Okay, I could be mistaken.
Gonna have to look it up now.
21.
I was mistaken. Okay, this is the third adaptation of Dune.
You count as adaptation. Certainly, we've had the 84 film with David Lynch. We had a Syfy Channel.
Yeah, a Syfy Channel extra miniseries. And this one.
Yes, and no doubt audio adaptations and the like as well. But on the screen, this is the third. This is only half the book, the first half of the book of Dune by Frank Herbert.
I've done a little bit of background looking. And depending on the print manufacturer of the book, Dune itself is 900 pages.
Got a copy of it somewhere.
The copy that you've got is really, really micro, tiny writing with no margin at the top and the bottom. It's the full page.
Yeah.
And that is 300 pages long.
Yeah. If you had the large print version, it would be telephone book or
something. Excuse me, no. Normal print version, not large, normal print. But yeah, it's cut it down so the book Dune is split into three books of itself, or three sections.
Okay, I've never actually read it, so I haven't a copy.
Oh, no, I have
it's
read
been
it.
It's intimidating.
I've read it. Yeah, it's split.
So you know what's happening.
I know, I got more of a handle on what's happening. But there we go, I had more of a handle of what was happening with the David Lynch one.
Right, okay.
But that was very confusing, so anyway.
That was.
So it's the first and the middle section, this film. So the next film should be the last bit of the middle section and then the last section of the book.
Basically, this is the fall of the House of Atreides.
Yeah, the setup of the saga, essentially.
And then the next one is the Fremening.
Yes.
So it's only going to be two parts, not three.
There is a third film, which is almost certain to happen, which is based on the next book.
But
Sire,
there are something like 12 books, I think.
I think there are 7 Frank Herbert books.
Yeah.
And then more than that.
By his son.
Brian Herbert.
So this could be a series of films.
As we know, they have actually they filmed and released two. Depending on the how well the ratings do, they could go on to God Emperor Dune, Children of Dune, and Dune Messiah.
Right, okay.
But yeah, this is certainly setting it up. It's more comprehensive. I will say that Fake Keith, Fake Keith enjoyed it.
Good.
She actually watched it.
Yep.
Unlike the David Lynch one, she didn't fall asleep halfway through it. She didn't get distracted by a tablet. She didn't play any games.
Good.
She actually watched it.
Because
so.
This one does feel slower, yeah. more deliberate than the 84 Lynch version.
Yeah.
That's for his betterment, frankly.
Yeah, it's got
the Lynch
more,
one is all over the shop.
More room to breathe.
Yes.
They've dropped the voiceovers. Which, yeah. it was a wonderful idea, but just didn't work.
Didn't work in Blade Runner either. Yeah. It was a bit of a thing back in the early 80s, yeah. early mid-80s.
Everything, it's been a few years since I've read Dune. A few years.
I bet.
But everything that is there has appeared in the first half.
I thought they were quite clever and they didn't bombard you with too much world building.
Yeah, yeah.
They mention things like the Spacers Guild, the Navigators.
Navigators.
You don't get to see them.
No.
Which they made a big thing of in both the Lynch and the TV version.
But you didn't in the book.
Okay.
You knew they were there and you knew they manipulated everything, but you didn't actually get to see them.
You don't need to see them?
No.
I think that was probably a mistake in both previous versions. The Weirding Way, that wasn't really mentioned in this film.
The Weirding Way is there. It's in the book. If I remember rightly, it's something like the Force. It's something that Bene Gesserit teach. It's a fighting form.
Right, okay. Right, yeah. You get the voice, which is important to the plot. And also, they were very clever in that the entire narrative was centred around Paul.
Yeah.
They didn't go off and do other stuff too much. In pretty much every scene he was in.
Yeah.
He's very focused on him, who is the main driving character.
Yeah.
So it should be. But in the Lynch version and other versions, you get a lot of other stuff going on.
So they did the setup with the Emperor and...
Yeah, we don't get the Emperor in the first one. We don't get the Princess.
I think the Emperor and the Princess come in on the second one.
They do.
Which is where they came in on the book as well.
Right.
They don't come in until the end of the book.
Get a mention, but
the only things that I am slightly disappointed with is the fact I haven't seen it explained in any version, but why they use swords rather than lasers and slug throwers.
Is it not implicit the Force shields will stop?
It didn't come across in the wasn't emphasized enough. I know the fact in the book that if they use lasers on the shield, then there is a nuclear-esque explosion.
Oh, really? Okay.
Taking out everyone.
Right.
Oh, blimey.
And the shields are designed to block any fast-moving thing.
Yes.
So that's why they can't use slug throwers.
Yeah, they get that famous scene in both film versions with the fight.
Yeah.
With Gurney, isn't it?
Gurney and Paul.
So Patrick Stewart in the first film.
Yeah. The book makes the Baron out to be a much more repulsive figure.
Yeah, he was slightly toned down this one, I think, compared to the Lynch version. Pustuled.
In the Lynch one, he was all pustuled. In this one, he is still massively overweight, which is why he needs the anti-grav harness to walk. And the book version, they tried to make him as repulsive as possible, so he had, an interest in small boys.
Okay, right, yeah. Well, yeah, you could do that today, but it's not necessary.
It's not necessary. We get the idea of bathing in that black oil.
Well, that was him trying to recover
it doesn't make so much out about the Mentats either.
No, you're right, the Mentats aren't renewed. They're there.
They're there.
I don't think they're there in the second film, but then it's after the House of Fall.
After the Fall. Do you think the listeners would know Dune? Do we need to explain the plot?
Very briefly.
Explain the plot!
It's very like Game of Thrones, where you have this vast empire with different little dukedoms. House Atreides, got House Harkonnen.
Yep.
Or Harkonnen, if you British version.
Harkonnen, I think.
Harkonnen, I think, is the correct pronunciation, but that's not the way they did it in the 84 version. But anyway. And they're all fighting for power in this empire.
Yeah, the Atreides and the Harkonnens have a blood feud going on.
They do, going back a long time.
Yeah, and also the Atreides, at the moment, their house is on ascent. They're the most popular house and their voice throws a lot of, holds a lot of weight in the Imperial court.
And through some machinations, the Emperor has deemed that Atreides will take over mining of spice on Planet Arrakis, Dune.
Yes.
And that is the key to the power of the entire universe, effectively. Yeah. Without that, you can't space travel. Without that, you have normal lifespans rather than extended lifespans.
On the face of it, it seems to be the Emperor's decided to hand them the keys of power.
But really...
Dun, dun, dun!
Just trying to nobble the Atreides.
Yes, done a deal with the Harkonnen.
Yeah. So my questioning on this and might help explain it to other people as well. So they have different areas, they have different houses.
So they each have their own planets.
Yeah, so the Caladan is the House Atreides home planet. Yeah. Galdi Prime is the Harkonnen planet. Yeah. There's also a Mentat planet. The Mentats are organic computers, basically.
So this is, like, fictionally, like... just their own area of space with planets and stuff.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And it's like Game of Thrones, they've got their own little kingdoms.
Yeah. Okay. So it's not just like, there's like this small section which is the big area for all of them, and then there's just random planets dotted around all of this.
They all have their own planets to feast them, the houses.
So we've got Paul Atreides,
Who
is the next in line.
Yeah.
And then they've got his father, Leto Atreides, played by Oscar Isaac, who gets murdered. That seems to bring down the entire House of Atreides, but you would think there'd be people on their home planet still.
Well,
somebody would be the most senior and take over.
From what I get, it didn't necessarily annihilate House Atreides, but it dealt it such a severe blow that it's no longer a major house, no longer a major player.
Right, maybe. So I don't know the book, maybe they go into it, maybe they don't.
No, they don't so much as it more concentrates on Paul and Arrakis. Because that's, as I said, where the universe turns around.
Yep. And then behind all of this, you've got the Bene Gesserit who are trying, and I'm not sure entirely successfully, trying to pull everybody's strings and manipulate events, and I think he gets out of hand, frankly.
That's the women, yeah?
Yeah, that's the women in black robes.
Yeah, so Rebecca Ferguson's.
Yeah, the Bene Gesserit, yes, they are trying to do political machinations for their own end, and more significantly, attempting to breed the next stage of human evolution.
Mm-hmm.
They're a semi-mystical, and... the mysticism there is an area where they can't see, an area where they mentally can't go. So they're trying to manipulate through bloodlines the next generation of human being to go to that space where they can't see.
So where Paul sees, basically.
Where Paul, not at the moment, but will see.
Right.
Once he's had the waters of life, like, or whatever it's...
Jessica, Paul's mother, isn't married to Leto, his father, but is a concubine to Leto.
Right. Okay.
It's almost like she's been rented out to him or something. Yeah. It's very strange.
The idea was that they have complete biological control over themselves.
Okay.
And she was meant to only bear Leto daughters.
So they could carry on.
So they could carry on with their genetic.
Yeah, yeah.
But unfortunately, she fell in love with him, and he wanted a son. So she gave a son and heir. So she gave him a son and heir. I'm not sure if it's going to be important into the next film or if they do any more films.
Mm-hmm.
But because of their bloodline manipulation, what isn't told here, but maybe told in the future, is the Baron Harkonnen is actually Jessica's father. But neither of them know this.
Right.
This may well come up in the next film.
But it is certainly more important in the books down the line.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So a lot of this reminds me of Star Wars. You can see where George Lucas is taking a lot of inspiration.
Yeah. Certainly with Arrakis, Tatooine, A Chosen One.
Yeah. The Bene Gesserit are quite Jedi like.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
some of the powers they have.
You had the voice.
The voice. Yeah. Been the Force.
Yeah. Exactly. And then spice.
Yeah.
You have mentioned the spice of Star Wars.
Not quite the same.
Thing,
it's an illegal drug.
But the word.
Yeah.
I think the book was written 1964, when the book was first written.
Something like that. Prophet of June of 65.
As was mentioned before, to steal from one person is called plagiarism. To steal from a lot of people is called research. So far, it's been the best adaption that I've seen. It depends whether they can stick the landing with part two.
They definitely do.
Have you seen it?
I have seen it.
Ah, okay.
It's very good. I do recommend it. But maybe we get on to that next time or sometime in the future.
Next time we shall...
Watching this film first time back in 2021, it did feel like it was an incomplete story, which it was.
Yeah.
It does get to a fairly natural pause point rather than halt point.
Where he kills Mbenga.
Exactly, who I did not recognise back then. When I rewatched it the other
Mbenga
day. It was Mbenga. I didn't remember he was in June at all, but they've got a lot to pack into the next film.
Okay.
For this one, I do like the fact that they do spend the right amount of time building up these characters.
Yeah.
Like... Paul is meant to be a bit of a a weak son who doesn't really know what he's doing. Yeah.
They've aged him up, but I think in the book, certainly to begin with, he was 13, 14 years old.
Okay, yeah. So
to begin with.
He's a bit older than that, and so he's got, you know, floppy hair and all that sort of stuff, which makes him look younger maybe than he really is.
Yeah.
So he's got a very definite character arc.
Yeah.
Which they're really going for.
Also, like with the first film, it is certainly a film of two parts, as in you have the water world, Caladon, where everything is nice and green and luscious.
Yeah, yeah.
And then certainly they emphasise the beauty of the open desert of Arrakis. Some of the shots there is magnificent.
Nice. Yeah, and if you watch behind-the-scenes stuff, there wasn't much green screen going on there. They were really on dunes.
Yeah.
It's not like the sci-fi version.
Yeah, that was all green screen.
Very obvious backdrops of sand dunes and that.
That was all green screen and, unfortunately, hideous early CGI.
I think a lot of it wasn't even green screen. It was just painted backdrops. But, you know, they had a budget.
Yeah.
So I have two things. One's a question, one's just a thing.
Come on.
I love the gliders, the plane things.
Oh, the Ornithopters.
Yeah. Which there's a Lego one of, which I now kind of want one.
Beautifully realised.
Dragonflies. Yeah, dragonflies. They're so cool. And the other thing was, my question is, in space, there's that big round thing that the ships seem to fly through, but I don't know if I missed an explanation of what it is.
Yeah, that was the colony. That was the transport ship.
Right.
Basically, the colonies fly up to there in the little ships, and they're sublight, while the big, dirty, great thing is the hyperdrive ship.
Right,
that's the bit that goes faster than light.
So, like in Star Wars as well.
Yeah,
and needs
the spice and the Navigator's Guild to pilot.
Right, okay. What I saw from some of the shops, I think maybe I just viewed it wrong, but it looks like it was something that had been flying through rather than out of.
Right, yeah. It's like a big cone-type thing
which they
fly into. And if you look at those ships as a leaving countdown, they're huge, those ships leaving the surface.
You saw it rise from above the lake, the colony ships.
These are huge ships, but they look absolutely tiny compared to the Navigator's
ship.
Yeah. One thing I like is they may mention it. It costs millions to actually hire this ship to transport them, which is why nobody really goes between worlds very much. It just costs so much money because of the spice required and everything like that. So Paul had never been off-world.
It's just the first time.
You get a feeling that a lot of these people just live on their planet, never go off-world.
Yeah.
It's only people like the Emperor who can even afford to do...
The high bureaucracy.
Yeah, which is an interesting world. It's very different to Star Wars, where everybody's got a hyperdrive-capable ship and just flip out all over the place.
Snub fighters.
X-Wings can apparently go in. TIE fighters go on. But
where was the X-Wing in the background? That's what I was looking for. No, I was impressed by, the casts.
Yeah, they've got this one.
Like, obviously, it's several people that I recognise from other franchises and stuff, but, the cast was just really cool, for different characters.
They've certainly splashed the money around for the talent.
Charney, Zendaya's character, she's barely in it. You get some voiceover from her, you get some flash-forwards with her.
Yeah.
But she's not really in the first film very much.
No.
But they had the confidence enough to cast somebody with her stature for that small role, knowing that she'd be a larger
part in the second half of the book.
Timothy Chalamet.
Whose name wasn't necessarily big when he was cast, but has certainly since 21 has made a name for himself.
Woody's Chocolate World or whatever it's called. Oscar Isaac, Rebecca Ferguson was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stellan Skarsgård, Dave Bautista was in there.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing. We haven't...
Charlotte Rampling.
Jason Momoa.
Yes.
Jason Momoa.
Javier Bardem.
Was quite a small part for such a big actor. But again, if they go on to the next books, the character becomes more significant.
Okay.
Yes, despite the fact he dies in the first film.
The character is more significant later on.
He doesn't turn up in the second film. I think that's correct. He doesn't turn up till the next book or two.
I think it comes significant in Dune Messiah. I think certainly God Emperor. He's back.
Okay. Also, I like the effects of the worm, the way it makes the sand vibrate to make it almost liquefy the sand so it can easily go through it.
So, on the whole, I think it certainly had a fake Keith seal of approval, which is looking forward to watching the second one to see what happens.
Yeah.
Because I think she fell asleep through the latter half of the Dave Lynch film. So there are a few, not I'm not going to say interesting choices, but a few choices that they made. Keys, they gender flipped.
Oh, yes.
In the Lynch film and in the book, the arbiter of the change is male. In this one, the arbiter of the change is female.
Yeah.
Doesn't change the story in any way, shape or form.
No. Maybe it's of its time, but every character who doesn't need to be female in Dune is male.
Yeah.
There's no characters who are female just because.
Yeah.
Every character who is female for reasons. So you've got the mother, female. Yeah. The princess.
Female.
Female. Charney. Female.
Love interest, female.
But the Bene Gesserit, all female. But otherwise, none of the other characters are.
Yeah.
For no good reason.
No.
So, yeah, I definitely think that's a good move to try to shake that up a bit.
As I say, it doesn't affect the story, and it's not an issue.
Yeah.
I just point it out, because I'm an old curmudgeonly fart, that they gender-flipped a couple of the characters.
There was a bit of controversy there at the time, but I don't see why. It doesn't affect the character, and it just makes it for a more realistic world.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be every other character is male just because they don't need not be.
And again, I think it was probably a choice of the time. The 84 movie, everyone was white.
Yes.
Whereas this one, it is multiracial.
Yeah, particularly amongst the Fremen.
Yeah.
Getting into the next film bit, you have the North Fremen and the South Fremen as well. There's a difference.
And so
Javier Bardem's character is from the South, which is why he's got a different accent.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think generally they did a really good...
Excellent
job. With taking what is quite a dense book,
yeah,
filtering it down to what it needs to be and no more.
Yeah, it's what we were saying about Rebel Moon last time. It's a difference between knowing the story and understanding the story. And this one, they understood the story.
Right. Yes. This might feel like the first half of the story.
Yeah.
But it feels like it's taken the right amount of time to set up the character situation.
Yeah.
Unlike Rebel Moon, where it's the first part of the story, which took four times longer than it needed to.
Yeah.
And didn't give you any character development
at all. And they are talking about releasing a director's cut so you can understand Rebel Moon.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not do that the first time? Make it an understandable film.
Yeah.
Rant.
Yeah, for this being my first foray into Dune, I enjoyed it. I don't know any of the history for any of the books. I've not read them, and I've not seen any of the versions, but I enjoyed it.
So the book is very heavy going and is wrapped up with the religion of the Fremen and the Empire as well.
You get more of that in the next film, particularly all the weird words they have for the Messiah and all.
Yeah.
The Sandworms got their own particular shy
allude.
Right. Which I don't know that you need to necessarily take in.
No.
Okay.
It's colour more than anything.
Yes. It's better than calling it, oh, big fat worm. Has a resounding seal of approval then.
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
Yep.
Watch it.
And then watch the second one.
Yeah. If you have any thoughts or opinions about anything we have mentioned, said, or
wait,
even...
Wait.
Or even remembered.
Wait. We've forgotten someone really important.
What?
Heather Pertwee.
Big giant head. All together now. Hello, Heather Pertwee. Hello, unsundry Graham, Terence.
Hello, everyone that we've
Godzilla
about.
The Mighty. No, Dave the Mighty, should I say.
Yeah. Goofield Grogu.
Dangerous Churchill, Hats. Nazi Spock. Where was I? Oh, yes. If you have anything to say, or even just to say hello to the head of poetry, tell us at show.
At
staggeringstories.net. Shows how low we are. We all got two things.
Yeah,
we all got two.
Sad day.
Oh, pity us. It was a Zimmerman, wasn't it?
Was Hans Zimmer, yes. Yeah.
Right. Is there anything else?
We may have had a little missive from a certain Crumbly.
Oh.
Ooh.
You mean to say we have a...
Crumbly's Corner!
Hello, Crumbly here. Sorry I'm not at tonight's podcast, but I'm currently on holiday in Hampshire at the moment.
It's all right for
but some. I would like to share my thoughts on what is being discussed tonight. Dune Part 1. What can I say about it?
Don't
it is big. Very big. When I saw the original movie version back in 1984, I was overawed by the scale of everything, from the size of the Highliners transporting House Atreides to the size of the sandworms that burrow in the depths of the planet. However, trying to fit a very thick novel into a 2.5-hour film was going to be a Herculean task, and in this respect, the movie did suffer a bit.
Oh, yeah.
Fast forward 30-odd years, money and technology has increased, and it shows. from the descent of the Imperial courier ship to the craft hovering over the planet Caladan prior to the Diaspora. The planet Dune has also had a bit of a makeover as well. All in all, the deserts and the Fremen have taken more of a Middle Eastern appearance. The Fremen still have their steel suits, but they are swathed in Bedouin robes now. As for the cast, House Atreides men still have the swarthy appearance, as in the 1984 original, Duke Leto, Gurney Halleck, and Duncan Idaho are all similar in appearance, except for the final scenes where Duncan Idaho goes smooth-faced in his battle against the Emperor's Sardaukat legions. I have no doubts that Timothy Chalamet is a good actor, but I feel he is a little bit too cute with his floppy curly hair to play Paul Atreides.
I think that's the point.
As a scion of a noble house, I would have expected him to be a little taller, a little burlier, and a little bit more swarthier. As for the supporting cast, they do a sterling job. Chani is played by Zendaya, who's too good for a surname. Dave Bautista plays Raban the Beast with relish. Yeah. The keywords with House Harkonnen are bald and brutal. And Baron Vladimir Harkonnen is still portrayed as a floating nightmare. I have yet to see part two, so I'll be curious and intrigued to see how Guild Steersmen are portrayed and how Fade Ruther is depicted. Sting's viciously cunning version is a hard act to follow. So, if you want a movie with action, scale, and a hefty dose of prophecy and apotheosis thrown in for good measure, then Dune is the movie for you. Moving on, I must share my opinions of Christopher Eccleston's latest audio outings. A Theatre of Cruelty draws heavily upon Antonin Artaud's concept that theatre must be immersive, threatening, and capable of releasing visceral emotions in people. This concept is expanded on when an Artaud starts experiencing dreams about a woman from one of his plays starting to appear in his dreams and urges him to tell her story. Primal forces left over from the creation of the universe are waiting to enter and wreak havoc. So it's down to the Doctor and Antonin Artaud to stop them in their tracks. This is a welcome return for Chris Eccleston's Doctor and the first part of an entertaining trilogy of stories. Anyway, that's enough of my inane ramblings. I'll be back in the air studio for the next podcast. So until then, this is me, Crumbly, saying, be seeing you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We miss you, Crumbly.
You obviously only heard the first disc.
Well, yeah. He summed it up very well.
After the waffling we did.
Yes.
Right. Do we have any letters?
We have a bit of feedback.
Oh!
We have letters.
A written bit of feedback this time, I believe.
Hello, staggerers et al.
Hello, Catherine.
Just a quick note from AwesomeCon.
Oh.
Well, from the recovery of AwesomeCon.
Okay.
I say note, having misplaced my actual notes for this feedback. Oops. Conventions have this effect on me.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the movie you watched. Spearhead was great.
Concise and to the point.
Yep.
Yay for the good things in the news. Sad for the deaths.
Yep.
Now I have to drive home and make more dragons.
Okay.
And Catherine the Dragon Maker.
Thank you.
Thank you, Catherine.
What was the film doing to people? I've forgotten already. Can we remember what we did last night? I can't.
was it Rebel Moon?
No, surely not.
Seared into my head, you know.
Argyle. That was it. A good film. Definitely recommend it.
Excellent film.
Great film.
Better than Rebel Moon, that's for sure.
Couldn't be a lot worse. Is that it?
That is it. No
Have
more.
We reached the end?
No more for this one. I think we've had plenty enough already. Thank you very much.
I think the moment has been prepared for.
And so, dear listeners, that brings us to the end of another podcast.
Oh.
But never fear.
Oh, God.
In the next one, there will be more of the same. More fun, frivolity and jollity. More news and reviews. More who... old and new, maybe. So until that...
D for Dune.
Demented.
Dumpling.
Dumps. Dung.
Dodgingly.
Dizzily. Towards us.
It's me, Adam, saying goodbye.
It's me, Stephen, saying goodbye.
And this is me, Keith, saying, the world is not in your books and maps. It's out there!
You have been listening to the Staggering Stories podcast, series 1, number 441, featuring Adam J. Purcell, Keith Dunn, and Stephen Clare. The views expressed here are those of the speaker and don't necessarily represent those of the other speakers of the site. No copyright infringement is intended, and this is an El Presidente production for www.staggeringstories.net.
It's got nothing to do with the actual service announcement. He just strips off. Good.
Hello, I got nuggies.
Please excuse the disgusting munching sounds.
Yeah, we might have to wait a minute.
I've just had a sudden vision of the Cookie Monster. You know? Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody wants that directly in their ears.
We have a couple of addendums. Would you like to go first? I've got a... Hang on. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, possibly 6 addendums
here.
Wow,
okay.
Closing theme, yeah, opening theme, Dune intro, Dune outro.
Yeah, as we were saying, I was going to play them all in live.
Oh, I see.
I'm not sure it's saving me any time doing this, you know.
Was it worth it?
Ask yourself, was it worth it?
Oh, definitely.
Oh, dear me. Gentlemen, if we're doing the examination, please remember, we are all within the Arctic Circle.